Curious City is supported by the Poetry Foundation, with a reminder that Chicago is the pulse of poetry. Visit the Poetry Foundation on the corner of Superior and Dearborn to explore their library of 40,000 books, attend public events, and view Frente a la Vida, Facing Life, a striking multidisciplinary art exhibition by Chicago artist Victoria Martinez. Learn more at poetryfoundation.org. WBEZ's nonprofit spotlight is supported by UChicago Medicine, providing expert primary and urgent care with locations throughout Chicagoland. Their walk-in urgent care locations offer a variety of services for adults and kids 7 days a week. No appointment needed. And for the visits that can wait a day or two, flexible hours and online scheduling make it possible to find a primary care provider partner. Learn more at uchicagomedicine.org.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is Curious City. I love a good third space. You know, a place you can visit that's not your home, that's not your job or school, but a place where you can connect with your community, your people. And depending on your age or your lifestyle, it's a plus if it doesn't revolve around drinking alcohol. These kinds of places were the go-to in and around Chicago back in the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Last episode, we heard about a couple of them. Coffee houses like It's Here and No Exit. These were places where Chicagoans could listen to music and connect with each other. And because they weren't centered around drinking, young people could join them too. Today, we're bringing you a conversation I had last year at the Evanston Folk Festival about another beloved third space that has also sadly come and gone.
Hello, everybody. My name is Erin Allen. Welcome, welcome, welcome. We're here to talk about Amazing Grace. Yay!
Amazing Grace was a music venue and artist community. Throughout the 1970s, this place was so special because it was both countercultural and popular.
For those two and a half years at the Main, this was the best music venue of any kind in the Midwest, possibly the country.
That's the voice of Neil Tesser, a Grammy Award-winning journalist who covered performances at Amazing Grace. Also joining me on stage was Corky Siegel, a pioneer in chamber blues and a member of the Siegel Schwall Band. Corky played at Amazing Grace several times.
The stage was 12 inches high, and the audience was right there. And you know, as an artist, when you were performing, you weren't going to be able to get away with anything.
Corky says he was first invited to perform there when another artist couldn't make it.
I get a call from a fellow, this guy, Jeff Beamsley, and he said, Biff Rose isn't going to be able to show up because his flight. Could you just come and, you know, do something, anything? I went, yeah, I got three songs, you know. So I went and I played the three songs.
And of course, and over and over again.
That's our jazz critic, our music critic.
That quote-unquote jazz critic chiming in was actually Dave Conant. He was one of the dozen or so founding members of Amazing Grace. He joined me on stage with another founder, Jeff Beamsley. They started off our conversation with the origin story. Amazing Grace was born out of protests in the spring of 1970 during the height of the Vietnam War. Around that time, students at hundreds of universities, including Northwestern, were demonstrating on campus after the National Guard killed student protesters at Kent State. They declared a national boycott of classes. Here's Dave.
We started during the student strike to feed people who were striking who didn't have otherwise immediate access to food. And at the same time, Northwestern had made the decision to take the food service cafeteria out of the student union at the time, which is Scott Hall. So there was this empty kitchen space, which we got them to agree to let us use.
Well, we took it over to begin with.
Well, pretty much, yeah. And then they
try to be nice.
That,
we
they
got
did
them
agree
to
that
agree.
We could. And it, as that went on, people from the area who were musicians would come in and play during lunch. And that became an increasingly attractive thing. And it snowballed from there in ways that we really had no way of either anticipating or, in a lot of cases, even directing.
When the school year ended, Dave says the strike ended. But the group wanted to keep the dream alive. So they ended up persuading Northwestern to let them set up in a small, unused building on campus called Shanley Hall.
We even got the university to move some of the kitchen equipment from Scott Hall into Shanley. So we had working stoves and things like that that we could cook on. And lunch at Amazing Grace became a serious thing. And we went from there.
Now, in case you've never seen it on paper, Amazing Grace is all one word with only one G. Why is that? Well, Jeff says a part of it is that some of their regular musicians would end their sets with the actual song Amazing Grace, and the audience would sing along. The community didn't really have a name at the time, so they landed on the title of that song. And then Dave says the graphic artists got involved.
Yeah, as I remember, it wanted to put it up there because it had become so popular, yeah. And there wasn't quite room for both G's.
Yeah, well, yeah, that too. Yeah.
Oh, it's really,
yeah.
It's true.
Like a lot of the things we did, they weren't intentional, but we were adventuresome. I called it typically a pirate mentality.
Amazing Grace stayed right there on Northwestern's campus until 1974. Then, Jeff says, fights over things like zoning laws and the university's nonprofit status led to a couple of relocations.
A portion of our group said, screw Evanston, we're going to go someplace where they really love hippies. And that was Eugene, Oregon. So they took off. And the rest of us stayed and said, you know, there's something happening here. And it isn't because of food.
They moved into a new venue in the heart of downtown Evanston, and people kept showing up for the music. Over its roughly 8 years of existence, Amazing Grace hosted notable artists in blues, jazz, and folk music. People like Emmy Lou Harris, Randy Newman.
You can't leave your hat on. You can't leave your hat on.
The Grateful Dead, John Prine.
It's Hello, California. Hello, Dad and Mom. Ship ahoy, your baby boy is home from Vietnam.
And American folk artist Odetta.
Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom. Oh, freedom over me.
The shows there were extraordinary.
Again, here's journalist Neil Tesser.
I would go to other jazz clubs and, you know, I'd glare at the people clinking glasses or talking too loudly behind me because I was trying to hear the music. The sound wouldn't be exactly right. Somebody would be grumbling over the bill. That didn't happen in Amazing Grace. Amazing Grace was a sacred space for music. And it was something utterly unlike anything any of us have ever experienced before.
And before I'd be
people loved this place. When I was hosting this panel in front of a tent full of folks with fond memories of Amazing Grace, several audience members got up to share their own personal stories.
I was lucky enough to be a 17-year-old freshman at Northwestern, and I went to Amazing Grace like all the time. I had Odetta sing right in my face and tell me I had a beautiful face, which I don't. And my question was, what did they serve with the brown rice? Because I wasn't sure if it was just cut up hot dogs or if it was actually some other kind of meat or something like that.
Depends on what day it was.
Here's some more appreciation from the audience, a woman named Barb.
We knew it was an amazing experience, you know, even though we didn't know the world of music that much yet, we knew.
There was something about certain performances that really contributed to that knowing. For instance, Brian Bowers was a singer who would have the audience circle up and hold hands for a sing-along of Will the Circle Be Unbroken? One person at the festival talked about how that circle extended to people waiting outside of Amazing Grace in line to get in.
I always loved going to Amazing Grace, and I loved Brian Bowers, and I remember being in there and just being so wrapped up in the music, and in that moment, will the circle be unbroken? And I was in high school.
Yep.
So for me at Evanston High School, like the coolest thing I could do was to go to Amazing Grace, yeah. Right? Yeah. And, but then even more so to see all of these people around, it was just so moving. Tears were in my eyes.
Yeah. By 1978, it was time for Amazing Grace to close its doors. Dave said they did make good money in the summers, but they struggled in the winters. And eventually, the financials of operating a venue caught up with them, specifically with Amazing Grace's landlord.
I explained to him, I said, well, let's just change the way we pay. We'll pay you more during the summer. We'll pay you less during the winter. And he said, I'm not your banker. Don't make me responsible for this. You signed a lease, and I'm going to hold you to it. Well, at the time, I thought that was terribly unfair. But in fact, that's reality smashing into an addiction.
They threw a going-away concert in July of 1978, and then they all moved on with their lives. Here's Jeff Beamsley talking to this crowd of supporters at the festival one last time, reminiscing on how their founding ethos kind of turned into a musical addiction and really left a lasting impact.
Ultimately, we realized, okay, we couldn't stop the war, we couldn't get somebody elected, but we could change people's lives 200 at a time, 400 at a time, give them a different way to look at themselves and their community, and give them a meaningful experience that would stay with them for the rest of their lives. And the fact that you're here 50 years later is testimony that it was a meaningful experience. And not everyone has the benefit of having those experiences. And the fact that you're willing to share them with your kids and talk about how they affected your choices in life, I mean, that is way more important than how long Amazing Grace existed.
This episode of Curious City was produced by me and Justin Bull. Mary Hall is our digital producer. Susie Ahn is our editor. WBEZ is a programming partner of the Evanston Folk Festival. This year's festival is September 6th and 7th. There's a blind presale happening right now through April 22nd. Details about that are in the show notes. Curious City is a production of WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. If you have questions about Chicago and the region, send them our way at curiouscity@wbez.org or visit us at wbez.org/curiouscity. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening. I'll talk to you next week.
Rise and Shy, WBEZ is serving local stories for breakfast every weekday morning from 5 to 11. Tune in on the WBEZ app to hear what Chicago's talking about as you start your day.